So there's this family. They had to rush their grandfather to the hospital, and unfortunately, they didn't know his blood type, so he didn't make it. But they got some inspiration through the whole story. They still remember it fondly. His last words that he just kept saying over and over again were, "Be positive." And they just remember him for that.
That one actually, that's pretty good.
Thank you. Welcome to Mistakes Dads Make. I'm Nathan Hart.
And I'm David Borden.
And this is a podcast with honest conversations about fatherhood, including mistakes that dads make
and how to redeem them.
We're glad you've joined us.
Well, welcome to Mistakes We Made Over the Holidays. Yeah. And Nathan, I know that you made plenty of mistakes.
Tons of them.
So I'd like to hear a couple of them.
Yeah, I'll start with one that's just a brief moment in time, but it was totally a mistake that does have a redemption story. So it fits the title. Yes, yeah, so it was Christmas morning and all these presents were being opened. You know, the children were enjoying the day, obviously, and great big surprise grand present at the end. You know, we bring out the best one for last. And I went upstairs and I came down with a new guitar, an acoustic guitar for my son Riley. Wonderful. He'd been asking for it and so excited, right? So he opens this case, you know, and it's got this beautiful wood guitar in it, and he puts it on his lap, you know, and he starts holding it and he looks at me and he goes, "Wait, this isn't left-handed?" And it occurs to me for the very first time, you know, that my son is left-handed and maybe he could have used a left-handed guitar, because, you know, I was so pleased with myself some weeks earlier when I went to the music store here in town and I picked out this guitar and I had my nephew help me pick it out. I was so excited and brought it home.
It's a big deal.
And it wasn't until Christmas morning that it dawned on me that maybe I should have gotten the left-handed guitar for my left-handed son. But the way that the story gets redeemed is, you know, I called up the music shop afterwards and I explained, like, "Can I get this exchanged?" And the guy actually explained to me that a lot of left-handed people, they play the right-handed guitar, because actually, if you think about it, your left hand does most of the work there.
It does.
On the frets. So I explained that to Riley and he was perfectly happy, and he's been practicing and getting pretty good actually for his first time. But yeah, I felt like such a dweeb on Christmas morning. It's such a special moment, and he looks at me like I don't even know him.
You know? I'm sure.
I felt pretty
well
bad.
In your defense, he's not super sportsy, as you like to say.
That's
so
true.
You haven't made that mistake with baseball gloves.
That's true.
Or golf clubs or anything like that,
right?
So
yeah, well, I think it was just like a space cadet thing. I was so excited to go buy this guitar.
Of
the
course.
Last thing on my mind was, you know, looking for a left hand. In hindsight, I'm kind of glad I didn't anyway, because like they say, you can learn it with the other hand anyway. But that morning, though, it felt like a miss. That Christmas morning, I felt kind of, you know, I felt like a bad dad.
Especially when it's the culminating present.
I know, exactly. All the lead up, all the build up, all the excitement. And he looks at me like, is this for left-handed people?
That's great.
How about
That's
you?
Great.
You didn't make any mistakes over the holiday? By the way, I have another more serious one we can talk about in a few minutes, but I want to turn it over to you first and hear about your mistakes.
No, I'm actually an amazing father and husband.
You know, that's not what Rachel says. And as soon as Samuel can talk, we're going to ask him.
Yeah, he can't talk yet, so I'm good right now. No, I definitely had a few. I'll talk about one.
Okay.
The dishwasher incident. So the day before Christmas, when all things were quiet, and just kidding, our dishwasher broke.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and dishwashers, I don't know how many marriages and families have been saved because of that device. Whoever designed the dishwasher,
I
just want to thank that person. I don't know who it is, but that's an incredible human being. But anyway, the dishwasher broke, and this was right after I had promised Rachel that I was going to watch our baby, Samuel, for 3 days.
While she went out of town.
She went out of town to Maryland for her birthday. She's a January 1st birthday. Kind of a terrible birthday, so close to Christmas. Everybody's tired from celebrating the new year.
What was in Maryland? Family? Or
she has her college roommate lives in Maryland. So she went down to visit her. But during her time away, not only was I alone in this house with the baby, trapped, but I also had no dishwasher.
Right.
And so in the midst of my loneliness, I had what God would love for me to do, and that was to have a pity party. And I remember complaining to myself. First, I actually patted myself on the back for my own virtue because I had taken care of the baby when so many husbands would have never allowed their wives to go.
Look at your self-righteousness. I've taught you well. You're learning self-righteousness well from me.
And then the self-righteousness got even worse as I was washing his bottles late one night without the dishwasher. Right. I was having to hand wash bottles. Can you imagine that? It was so painful. I was, after the fact, I was thinking about, is it Father Lawrence?
Your Brother Lawrence.
Brother Lawrence. Yeah. Brother Lawrence, his job as a monk was washing dishes, right? And he writes that book, Practicing the Presence. Yeah. And he talks about worshiping God doing dishes. And I was actually doing the opposite.
Right.
I was worshiping, I guess, myself and my own pity.
Wasn't he peeling potatoes?
Yeah. There's a few different stories in there.
And he finds, like, in the tedium, he just kind of switches his mind over from complaining about it to just worshiping God in it, and he finds all this joy. Oh, I love that book.
Yeah,
it's so good. So you were not.
I was the opposite of Brother Lawrence. Yeah. And so it was redeemed rather quickly. My pity party and my own self-righteousness was redeemed because then I picked up a book a little later that night on my Kindle after I laid the baby down. Ernst Jünger's famous book, Storm of Steel, most decorated veteran of World War One.
Okay, never heard of it, but go on.
He was a storm troop in the German army. These were like frontline soldiers that went out to storm the opposing trenches. But I'm just reading these horrific stories about losing all of his soldiers and having to go through just horrific weather and fighting off rats and disease. And God was like, yeah, you have a lot to be thankful for, David.
Right.
And that conviction really actually led me to a place of feeling gratitude for actually getting to spend time with my with my baby.
Right.
And the next couple of days we were together was much more enjoyable. And I actually worshiped God while I was washing dishes the next couple of days. So there was definitely a shift. But that was one of multiple dad fails or mistakes I made over the holidays. Yeah. Let me hear what your other one
is. Well, I want to stay on the dishwasher for a second because I know that feeling. Like when you're doing chores or whatever, you know, and you're just like, I really resonate with other husbands wouldn't do this. I mean, what a dumb lie that we call ourselves.
I'm not the only self-righteous husband here.
I am so sorry. I think I've gotten better at that over there. I think I used to do that more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've just really been convicted by the Holy Spirit not to do that anymore. Just let things be what they are. And but I guess secondly is I'm sure everybody listening wants to know, did you get your dishwasher replaced?
We have a new dishwasher.
Oh, look at you.
I live in a parsonage.
Yeah, look at you.
I have a wonderful church that provides for me. I didn't have to buy the dishwasher.
Wow.
I had to go like 7 days without a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And you would have thought that my life was ending.
Aren't we so just weak?
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, the crazy thing is for me, you'd think I'd have more perspective because like 3 years ago, I was in the Middle East.
Right.
I was in a combat zone. Like, but it doesn't last. The perspective doesn't last.
Yeah, how quickly our luxuries, like, coax us into entitlement.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And blindness, right? Yeah. I was blind. Like, I was so focused on my lack of dishwasher that I was blind to the fact that
I
have a healthy baby,
right?
I have a child. A lot of people can't have children, you know, all these things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's good to be able to look back and laugh at ourselves.
It is.
We have to. Yeah. Well, I do have another one. It's not so much a mistake I made. It's the potential for many, many mistakes. And I'll explain what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Evangeline, is now in the sixth grade. She's 11. She'll be 12 in a couple months. And she's, you know, fully adolescent or pubescent or whatever you call it. And, you know, she's really getting into that age-appropriate stage of, you know, starting to
question
and reject, you know, authority.
Yeah.
And I'm having all kinds of feelings come up, you know, grief a little bit, her stage of being a little girl, sitting on my lap and snuggling with daddy and just having me be daddy to her. And now it's, I'll illustrate it with this eye roll. You know, she's got a hard up to the left or up to the right eye roll for dad. And, you know, I drop off the kids at school most days of the week. And I've been doing that since they were really little. Mm-hmm. I love that time together. And we have this little daily routine where before she gets out of the car, you know, I used to say, and now I don't even have to say, you know, look me in the eyes, because I like to be able to lock eyes with her and smile, you know, before she goes off to her school day. Well, lately, I'm like, look me in the eyes. And she looks at me. And what does she do? She rolls them. So that's her last encounter with me before going off to school.
That's so wonderful.
And the reason I bring it up is, you know, I feel, I mentioned I feel sad. I feel grieved. Mm-hmm. I'm grieving the loss of the stage. But I also feel, you know, kind of like defensive, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, really? That's how you're going to treat me? Mm. And that's not a great feeling to have.
Yeah.
And I feel, yeah, I just feel not great feelings. And so I am afraid a little bit that I'll start acting out on some of those feelings because I don't want to do that. You know, I know she's going to go through this phase, mm-hmm. Even beyond the eye rolling. She's, you know, like it's time to go to church or whatever, or she'll be going to a youth event mm-hmm. from church, and she'll say like, is there going to be God talk there? You know, and I'm like, wait, what? Where it was so much easier with Riley because Riley, he loves all the things I love. Mm-hmm. He's a lot like me. He loves God talk. He loves church. He loves all the stuff that I like. Even music, we have the same music tastes where he'll play U2 or Coldplay or something. And Eva, what does Eva do? I hate this band, you know? So it's all the stuff. But I need to just really posture my heart to let her be her own person. And mm-hmm. if that means rejecting some of the things that I like or I'm into, I really have to resolve that in my own heart now mm-hmm. and be totally okay with that so I can keep loving her unconditionally for who she is. And just let her have her own interests. And with the eye roll, I just really need to not take it personally mm-hmm. because that's actually stage appropriate. What do they call it? Self-actualization mm-hmm. or something like that. It's an appropriate thing. You have to start thinking about your life outside the authority and rules and expectations of your parents. So she's growing up. It's mm-hmm. great, actually, that she's becoming independent.
Yeah, that's so the goal.
I have to celebrate that
and
not be hurt by it because that's mm-hmm. really just about me. I need to just let her go through this stuff. You haven't had
a 7-month-old baby. Yeah. He's eye rolling a lot at me.
Do you have any general wisdom though for that kind of idea?
That's interesting. Well, I had a conversation with my parents the other day and they asked me how my parenting was going. And I said, Samuel doesn't have any tattoos yet. So I think I'm doing a pretty good job, but no, I mean, I think you're onto something in the response,
right?
Right. You can't control your daughter.
Right.
But you can control your own response to your daughter.
Yeah.
And I think most men, they actually flip that.
They try to control their daughter.
My child, especially with daughters, I think because there's that protective instinct more than with sons. And instead of thinking I need to control my response to my daughter, right? How am I responding in the situation? They think I need to control her response.
Right.
Which isn't really possible.
And that's just a recipe for frustration and conflict.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're onto something already. Navigating your feelings, mm-hmm. right? Like you kind of already have gone through the thought process. Oh, I don't really like the way it feels when she rolls her eyes at me, mm-hmm. but how am I going to respond to this eye roll now? Yeah. You know, am I going to say to her, you need to stop doing that right now? Like that's totally inappropriate. Or, you know what I mean? Are you going to really challenge her on it and really probably have her double down on the eye roll? Do like a double eye roll?
Right. That sounds just like miserable.
Yeah. It just keeps building, you know?
Yeah. I just need to keep leaning into, you know, we talked, was it episode 1 or 2 where we talked about the difference between a wildflower and a bonsai tree?
Yeah, it was early on.
Yeah, the bonsai tree, you manipulate and you control how the tree grows and exactly the shape you want, whereas a wildflower, you just give it the nutrients. And I just really need to lean into that idea for her. Just let her become exactly who God created her to be. And for a little while, that's going to be uncomfortable because she's going to reject some of the things I've been raising her on. Mm-hmm. But that's ultimately, if I have any desire for her to not only be in a good relationship with me, but to have a good understanding of who her Heavenly Father is, I need to just let her fly for a while.
Yeah. You
know, obviously there's expectations and rules and she's not going to leave the house wearing a mini skirt and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have rules, but as far as who she is, I really just need to let that develop.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you talk about the end goal. The end goal is to not end up with this person that needs me. That's not the end goal. And I think a lot of parents, their parenting is actually designed with that end goal in mind.
Right.
They think to themselves, I'm designing this child that needs me.
Interesting.
And that's just because we all have this desire to be needed or wanted, I guess, I think deep down. And, you know, I think it was at our first or second episode, you said, you know, the ultimate goal is to raise adults.
Right.
Healthy
independent
adults.
Independent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the way you do it. By, you know, not trying to manipulate the bonsai tree.
You got any other mistakes on your mind from the last few weeks?
I think, you know, now that you mention your response to Eva, I would say even with dealing with a 7-month-old, there are some responses that you can have in your parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I've noticed that's nuanced between my wife and I is I think mothers are much more protective in their instincts for a child.
Yeah.
And fathers are much more like, the child needs to learn, like
take risks,
falling or by doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel is starting to become a little more autonomous.
Right.
And so, for example, he's starting to crawl, kind of. Mm-hmm. He's rocking and he can kind of plank and push his way forward.
Yeah.
But our house is not that warm. And that's partly because it's wintertime right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep the heat at like whatever, 68 degrees. And Rachel, her response to having a cold house is clothing Samuel in like a thick onesie.
Okay.
But his feet are covered up. Like I had sensory stuff I don't think is necessarily getting its full effect. So whenever Rachel goes away, the onesie comes off and Samuel is...
So he can learn to crawl, right?
Full out diaper.
Yeah, he can't really learn to crawl in that thick onesie.
Yeah, no. I think he's got to have the freedom, right?
Right. But you're freezing him to death.
Yes, exactly. He might die, though.
Oh, no,
so
I'm sure he's fine.
I think what I'm learning is how to navigate parenting with another person.
With a partner, yeah.
And I think there are many cases where the safety of the child is very important, and I may not be thinking about the safety of my child enough.
Yeah.
You know, but there are cases where he's going to have to fall. He's going to have to get scrapes. Yeah. You know, he's going to have to do those things. And so I'm learning how to navigate that. You and I have talked about this idea of how your parenting changes with each child and how it's so joyful to watch someone that has like 5 or 6 kids.
Yeah. They don't have a onesie on at all.
No, they don't even know what onesies are. Yeah. But I was just thinking about, I have a friend that has 4 kids and they talked about, you know, dealing with the pacifier with their kids. You know, your first child spits out the pacifier and what do? You know, you scrub, go wash it in the sink with soap and water, and then you put it in the sanitizer to sanitize it. You know, and once all the germs have been dead, you put it back in the child's mouth. Second child, you know, you bring it back to the sink, you wash it with soap and water, no sanitizer, put it back in the mouth. Third child, you kind of wipe it off on your leg, put it back in the mouth. Fourth child, you just pick it up off the ground and stick it right back in.
In fact, I think you scrape some new germs onto it
because
it's good for their immune system.
But in a way, you know, I kind of wish that I could be like that person with 4 children.
Right.
But I think you kind of
have to go through it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like I've heard when people become grandparents, some of them say, I love being a grandparent. I recommend doing it first. Wish you could. You know, on the difference in parenting choices between a father and a mother, I saw this photo online some time ago. And it was an actual photograph. It was 2 photographs, one on the top, one on the bottom. And it was one of those big bouncy slides.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And they must have been like kind of like at Disney World where they take your picture when you're coming down.
Yeah.
You can smile for the camera. Well, the first picture was the mom. It was the same kid, okay, in the top and bottom picture. The top one's the mom, bottom one's the dad. And the mom had the kid right up, like they were both sitting up nice and orderly, and their hips were together. And the mom had her arms around the child, and down they went perfectly safe. You know, with the child in the mother's arms, basically.
Yeah.
And then the photo on the bottom, the kid was like 5 feet ahead of the dad, upside down, limbs flailing. And the dad was, you know, nose first, coming behind him, screaming, yeah!
That's awesome.
You know, this is great. And the caption was something like the difference between, you know, parenting between a mom and a dad. But yeah, like dads, I don't know. There's probably a lot of biology and everything there why we're more willing to take risks. And I guess maybe the wisdom is children need both. Children, they need that safe cocoon and they need those risk-taking experiences and just learning to appreciate from the husband and the wife.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, life is full of risk mitigation.
Right.
You always, every decision we make, there's a risk involved.
Yeah.
And I think for children, you can potentially raise a child that's so risk averse that they don't make decisions, which I think we're seeing that, you know, in some of the current generations. I think they say Generation Z is the most risk averse generation ever in history.
Yeah.
And there are some good things about that. Pregnancies in teens are way down, you know, premarital sex is down.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if these people are really going to get married because marriage is a huge risk, right?
Well, I've been hearing from parents saying their 16-year-olds don't want to take driver's ed and don't want to get their driver's license.
That's wild to me. Yeah. When I turned 16, I was like, get me out of here, you know?
I was counting down the days.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
I had already bought a car when I was 15. I bought a car, and on my 16th birthday, drove it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But can you imagine that? That's making your point, that the new generations are risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, maybe we can wrap up the conversation by just applying that to the kingdom. Mm. You know, as pastors, you know, I think your risk mitigation statement is true. Like, you know, it's been a struggle, obviously, over the last 2 years. It's like, oh, cancel worship services to reduce risk of, you know, the spread of COVID. Mm-hmm. Well, then we realized, okay, you send everyone home into isolation. Guess what you've just done? You've just increased all the risks that
of
come from isolation, emotional, psychological, relational. So there is no risk-free option. Mm-hmm. And now, so hopefully we've learned some of that from the pandemic, but not going forward. You know, what I've been thinking about is, do we want to be like a quote-unquote safe church where it's just for us, just for our members and their comfort? Or do we want to be a church that really takes big risks and like goes and buys a big building in downtown Stanford and expands the kingdom to the next generation? That's a big risk, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But have you been thinking about that sort of thing too as a pastor?
Yeah, well, I've just been thinking about, you know, safety and comfort. Those are kind of two buzzwords today.
Oh, yeah.
Safety and comfort are not a goal for Jesus in my life. Like, Jesus does not desire for me to be safe and comfortable.
Wait, what?
That's a very dangerous place to be. And I don't think as a pastor, my desire, should be aligned with Jesus for my congregation. Jesus doesn't want our congregation to be safe or comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, and so what does that mean? That means we're going to have to take some calculated risks, right? We're not being crazy, but
You say a little bit more? Because I would guess somebody just heard you say that and they're like, it probably doesn't even sound right.
Yeah.
Can you talk about like Jesus' own decision of safety versus risk?
Oh my goodness. Where to even start? Yeah. Well, with Jesus and the first 12, they all ended up risking their lives and ended up losing their lives. Wow. All but one, John, who was exiled and should have lost his life. If these men and women, early women of the church, had been living their lives to try to uphold comfort and safety, you and I, we wouldn't be here today, right? We wouldn't have be recipients of the gospel. I think of all these lines throughout scripture. Like in the book of Hebrews, the author says, you know, that you joyfully accepted the plundering of your property.
Jeez.
Because you knew you had a better possession, an abiding one, right?
Wow.
And
that's so different, isn't it?
That's crazy.
So different than what we're accustomed to pursuing.
It is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to answer your other question, I think in terms of the pandemic, oftentimes what we see is the cure ends up being worse than the disease.
Right.
And you've heard me say this a few times, like isolation is so bad for the soul.
Yeah.
You know, we know this because we know when you have someone in prison that's surrounded by a bunch of criminals that have made all these different bad decisions in lives, what's the worst thing you can do to that person in prison?
Put them in isolation.
Separate them from all these criminals, right?
Wow, it's even worse.
And so I think oftentimes, and what we're seeing now is that cure is worse than the disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that note, that's actually kind of a sad note, but the positive spin on it though is, let's go be bold. Let's go expand the kingdom, even if it costs. Here's a way to kind of maybe think about it. What if expanding the kingdom cost you your job or your financial security or your dishwasher, you know, to bring it back to that, would you still do it?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a test. Like, wow, how much do I believe in this? And I feel energized by that. I feel like, let's go. Let's keep doing
this. Let's take this hill.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
God bless you all. Thank you for listening to Mistakes Dads Make. Please take a moment and rate this podcast wherever you found it and share it with a friend. We'll see you next time.